Welcome. I'm going to call the tax committee to order. We don't have a quorum yet, but we're just going to get started. And Representative Nelson, you're up first, and if you can join us, we will move your bill when we can. Okay? So we understand you have a pretty quick one here, and so we're going to get this out of the way. And then when we have a quorum, we'll move your bill. Representative Nelson to House File 4062. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and National Committee members. This is the idle reduction technology. And I have Jeremy Esterson. Yeah, I was here from the truckers industry, and he'll explain the bill, and we'll go forward from there.
Okay, welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. For the record, my name is Jeremy Esterson. I work for the Minnesota Trucking Association. This bill came up as a result of some of the changes that have occurred in our industry lately, specifically the price of fuel and the environmental awareness now that's starting to take place, both because of regulation and because of the desire to do the right thing. And as our industry has changed, looking for solutions to essentially burn less fuel, one of the first things, the lowest hanging fruit, was dealing with that 10-hour period that federal law requires us to stop driving on any given day. And during that time, to stay comfortable, whether it's wand the cab, go the cab, run electrical appliances, generally a driver would have to run the engine, the main engine of the vehicle, which can consume as much as a gallon of fuel per hour. These devices were the industry's response to cutting down the fuel consumption and still achieving that goal. So many of these auxiliary power units are little one- and two-cylinder generators, essentially, that mount to the frame rail of the truck. They burn diesel fuel out of the tank, and they provide those services. They heat the fuel, they heat the cab, they run the microwave, etc. The reason we're in front of you today is because those devices obviously are not used to propel a vehicle down the road. And in much the same way a cement truck or a refrigerated trailer or something else can use fuel for non-highway purposes, we're looking to exempt the fuel used in these things from fuel taxes. And in fact, just handed out to you, I believe, was a little packet on the front of a fuel rebate form, PDR-1. And in fact, this is the form that those folks who have PTOs or whatever might use. We're looking to do something similarly for the fuel used in these devices.
Thank you, Mr. Esterson. Further testimony, Representative Nelson?
I believe there was an amendment that was passed.
Yep. We do have a quorum now, so Representative Marquardt will move. What's the bill here? House File 4062 for possible inclusion in the Amish Tax Bill. And Representative Marquardt, do you want to move the amendment for Representative Nelson that's just been passed out?
I will move the A1 amendment.
Okay, so Representative Marquardt moves the A1 amendment. Discussion for the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the bill, basically, it's about saving on fuel and saving on energy, because these take a tenth of the energy of running the big diesel truck. And so it's going to save fuel, it's going to save on air pollution, and at the same time allow the truckers to take their 10-hour break that they're required by law to do. And I think it's all around, it's a good way to go about this instead of having them run those big trucks, idle them, and create that air pollution out there. It's a good way to continue keeping the truckers safe and warm, but still have allow them to take their breaks as they're supposed to.
Okay, thank you for that. Are there questions for Representative Nelson or his testifier? Anyone from the public who wants to testify for or against this bill? Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, question for staff. Looking at the revenue notes, I see the decrease to the highway user tax distribution fund, but reading the research summary, I understand that the general sales tax would be applicable here if we exempted them from the gasoline tax. And I'm wondering what the net trade-off is. I'm sure it's still a loss to the state, but in different pots.
Ms. Stone.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, that's true. Any fuels that we exempt from the motor fuel tax would become taxable under the general sales tax unless we also gave them a general sales tax exemption. Normally that's done. So this is, this amendment is really more of a technical correction because normally when you're you know, specifically exempting something from the motor fuels tax, then we tend to give them the complimentary offset in the sales tax, because otherwise the sales tax wouldn't kick in. So basically, the revenue estimate from the Department of Revenue is merely what is the loss if you change from current law. But, you know, if you want to know, if you hadn't adopted the amendment, how much money would have gone to the general fund? It's 6.5% times whatever diesel fuel or whatever other type of fuel that they are using would be.
Okay. I understand better. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Further questions? Further testifiers? If not, we're going to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in the honor of the tax bill. Thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Representative Briners, I think, has negotiated an agreement with the folks who are actually ahead of her on the agenda and has gotten them to agree to let her go first. So welcome, Representative Briner, and let's see.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative, who would like to move House Bill 3399? Anybody? No takers? I will. Representative Carlson will move House File 3399. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have an amendment, the A2 amendment.
Representative Carlson moves the A2 amendment for Representative Briner. Discussion to the amendment. Not all in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Briner.
The amendment simply adds the reverse referendum provision and the nonprofit exemption on the food and beverage and entertainment tax. So I'll just give a quick introduction and then introduce my testifiers. House File 3399 proposes the extension of Mankato's local option sales tax as well as the imposition of a 1% food and beverage and entertainment tax. These are in service of Mankato's Civic Center expansion, which has been an integral part of a downtown renaissance plan and a university-city partnership agreement. The entire context for the Civic Center development is a long-standing planning process based on extensive civic engagement, originally known as Riverfront 2000, and now transformed into Envision 2020. There is broad citizen involvement in this process, as well as private and public sector support. Our Civic Center, now the Altel Center, opened in 1995 and was built without seeking state bonding money. Our first reach for bonding support was this session's bill, and the line item veto of our $975,000 request for planning funds simply serves to further highlight our need for this tax proposal. Here to speak on behalf of Mankato's proposal are Pat Hentress, Mankato City Manager, and Jonathan Zierz, the President and CEO of Greater Mankato Growth, the recent merger of the Chamber and Economic Development arm of the Greater Mankato area. And Pat Hentress, the City Manager, will start.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Hentress.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I'd just like to make a few points regarding our extension and the request for the what I'll refer to as the hospitality tax. It's the food and beverage entertainment tax. Essentially, we are requesting an extension of authority from 2015, when our sales tax expires, to 2025. That will allow us to seek expansion of our project in concert with Minnesota State University and also the local organizations and regional organizations that will use our Performing Arts Center besides the current relationship that we have on the Minnesota State hockey arena. Additionally, we feel that this extension will put us on a level playing field with the other central regional centers that have event centers, arenas, and convention centers. As Representative Briner stated, we have not at any point sought state funding up until this year. And it is critical that we can upgrade our facilities, expand those facilities in concert, or at least with our efforts with Minnesota State, and we have that relationship. Again, if we do not receive The extension, we will be at a significant disadvantage in that many of these other facilities already have state bonding money plus a variety of other funding sources to maintain their facilities. Additionally, the partnership that we have with Minnesota State, along with the economic impact of this current center, has both value for the state of Minnesota in that we estimate that there's at least $3 million of combination savings and gains from the economic impact of overall our center in terms of how it's organized. And then additionally, certainly that this is a centerpiece of maintaining our overall marketplace in the Midwest for a convention and event center, and also maintaining an economic impact for the region. I think Jonathan Zirk, our CEO, will talk additionally about the widespread support that we have for this project locally.
Well, Madam Chair and Committee, my name is Jonathan Zirk, and as Representative Brainerd said, I am the President and CEO of a newly merged organization, and is the merger of our Chamber of Commerce and our Economic Development Organization, by the way, the first of its kind in the state of Minnesota. We also operate, as part of our organization, a Convention and Visitors Bureau. So these activities that we're talking about are really critical to the place that our regional center has and the role that it plays in the economy of South Central Minnesota as well as the state of Minnesota. I can tell you that I'm here in part this evening, as was a contingent, a small contingent from our community last week, small but mighty, with strong representation from a good cross-section of our community, the president of our university, a number of our successful business leaders and entrepreneurs, and myself, along with Mr. Hanchett, to talk about the Civic Center and the sales taxes, the tax issues that help make that possible. We as a community are unified in that approach, in the need for this continued asset, for its presence in our community, for its growth, its maintenance, its expansion. It is a critical partnership that exists between our university and the city, and it really serves as a terrific model in the way that we've been able to really leverage that relationship and the dollar or the mechanism through the sales tax to actually be able to put those in place. One of our members that was here last week actually said that, and I'm not sure that I'll get the quote exactly right, but 53% of all the automobiles that he sells from his dealership in Mankato are purchased outside of a 45-mile radius. We know that we draw a tremendous amount of economic activity into our regional marketplace from areas that aren't even within the state that utilize the Civic Center and utilize our commercial activities in our regional marketplace. We need to continue to be able to provide for that kind of a market presence. As Mr. Hedges said, this mechanism allows us to continue to grow that presence that we have, that asset that we have in that Civic Center and the expansion of that to a Performing Arts Center and a Women's Hockey Exposition Center, all critical aspects of the university program as well as the community's program in order to maintain that presence that we have in a regional marketplace, not just in the state, but in the upper Midwest, and that's a critical aspect to us. Furthermore, as an organization, we too have made a very significant commitment as a private organization to really focus on the Convention Visitors Bureau activities as well as these Renaissance activities that we have in terms of the regional marketplace and increasing those activities to folks that are accessing it. So, in part, my testimony here this evening is to bring you that broad-based perspective from our business community as well and to represent that here for you this evening. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Was it Mr. Zirk?
Zirk.
Okay.
Is it the word ear? Put a Z at the front and a Z at the end.
Okay,
yep.
Thank you. Ear. Got it. Anyone else, Ms. Representative Brainerd, that you wanted to have testified for?
No, these are justifiers.
Okay,
are there any questions?
Anybody for or against this proposal before we move on? Okay, Representative Earhart has a question. Representative Earhart.
Madam Chair, I just wondered if the 3.5 years is over.
The 3.5, well, you know, Representative Earhart, I wanted that to be 300.5 years. That's my goal, personally. But I think what Mankato's asking for is an extending a current one, allowing it for operations and changing its use with a combo of the food and beverage tax and the entertainment tax as well, if I understand that correctly. And you know, Representative Earhart, I don't know if you're get further on that, because I do have a question for someone who might be here with the governor who could give us the governor's view on the bonding proposal. I see Mr. Manson over there, which isn't fair to him. He's looking up Department of Revenue. That's not us. But
Erhard, if you don't have further, is there someone here from the governor's office who could talk to us about the Mankato proposal? Anyone? Well, you know, I guess, you know, Representative Briner, I do want to know, honestly, this tax committee gets passed with your problem, because it is strange to me that of all these hockey arenas that you guys got singled out for not getting your sign. Isn't that accurate? I mean, weren't there a bunch and people said, you know, let's not do hockey arenas, but then they all got signed except yours?
Well, Madam Chair, this isn't a set-up question.
I mean, that's what I heard, not from you. And so I have to say, honestly, I sort of resent that the tax committee is getting dealt with, is having to deal with this proposal now, because all the other hockey arenas got signed. So can you, I didn't want to, you know, it's kind of unfair to have you answer the governor's position, but I didn't follow the bonding bill, and did you get a reason why your particular arena didn't get signed?
Madam Chair, I'll be honest and say I wouldn't presume to speak on behalf of the governor or his office, but I'll say that we would be here with this proposal anyway, because the local match for the bonding would come from the sales tax, and we were asking for the food and beverage and entertainment tax to contribute to the operation of the Civic Center expansion. So they are seen as an integral proposal. It's just that without the planning money, we have to come up with that extra $975,000. So, yes, I would say that we were a bit disconcerted by the fact that every other Civic Center and Convention proposal was funded, and ours, which was the smallest, less than $1 million, was line item vetoed, and no, I don't know what the explanation is.
Well, and I guess I'd just say if anyone can, you know, let the governor's staff know that if they want to come tomorrow and tell us why, we'd be interested in knowing, but I appreciate that clarification, Representative Briner, and you know, I think a lot of you have talked to Representative Briner and her staff about this proposal, and I'll just be really honest. I don't think we should be doing more costs in sales taxes, period, but certainly not for operations. So I just, you know, want to be clear on that. But I do want to ask Ms. Dalton, though, if I may. I think in general, these food and beverage taxes and entertainment taxes, pretty much everyone who asks for them gets them, because that's fully locally. Ms. Dalton, can you... Have we ever turned anyone down who wants a food and beverage tax?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Bill and I were actually discussing that over here, and neither of us can come up with any of them that we've turned down in our history here.
I just throw that out there for not just you, but for the whole committee to think about. I mean, I shared with Representative Dabney and Representative Mahoney just recently in a meeting that, you know, when Minneapolis brought their convention center in, they put a food and beverage tax in, which is generally how people do it. St. Paul didn't. I don't really know why, and they probably should have. And those are funding sources that I think are appropriate for convention centers, and generally we've been supportive of those, but the committee is going to have to think further about local option sales tax. I think you've heard that from another number of people, Representative Briner.
Yes, Madam Chair, we do recognize the general position of both this committee and the Property Tax Division on the local option sales tax and respect that as a long-range plan. We do, however, want to ask you to look at the uniqueness of the situation in terms of this being an extension and the existing project being extended in its own right. But also, I want to clarify something you mentioned about the operations. With this proposal, we would no longer be using our local option sales tax for operation expenses. We would move the food and beverage and entertainment tax to cover the operation expense, so that we would be more in line with your philosophy of the appropriate use of the local option sales tax.
So maybe Ms. Dalton or Mr. Michael, so you're not repealing the limit on how long you could use it for operations. You're repealing the use of it for operations.
Exactly.
Correct?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good thing.
I thought you would appreciate
that. 3 out of 5
that.
Are pretty good so far. Reverse referendums, we like those too. Okay, so further discussion from the tax committee members on these local option sales taxes. And I should say also, this was not heard in division because Representative Marquardt wouldn't hear any of them. He only put in the ones that were in the vetoed tax bill. Representative Lenny.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Briner, just so you don't think you're the only community that didn't get what we asked for, we had a sporting facility for my community that was also vetoed, and I haven't heard a reason for it either. So I don't feel like you were the only one that's picked on.
Thank you for pointing that out, Representative Lanning. Representative Simpson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I don't know if this is for Representative Reinhart or maybe for the Chair. We just extended this from 05 to 2015, correct? And now we're extending it from 2015 to 2025. 2 years from now, are we going to extend it to 2040, or what am I missing here?
Well, let Ms. Stahl answer that one. Representative Krenke did give, or was it Representative Abrams? I think it was Representative Krenke extended Mankato's whole class of children. Maybe it was North Mankato. Ms. Dalton, please tell us. Madam Chair, Representative Simpson, Mr. Hentges may correct me if I get some of the details wrong. Essentially what happened is that there had been misunderstanding, miscommunication about the limit on the Mankato sales tax originally.
Mm-hmm.
There was some belief that it was a limit that they could only raise a set dollar amount. There was another belief that they could bond that dollar amount, and then they could also spend money on operations. So by the time they hit the total dollar amount that some people thought they could spend, they hadn't paid off their bonds. And so what happened a couple of years ago is that there was a clarification that was kind of a compromise between those two interpretations that basically said, okay, if you allow a reverse referendum, I believe there was a reverse referendum.
Referendum.
There was a referendum on that basically said if you hold a referendum and get it okayed with your population, you can continue this tax. There's a limit on how much you can use for operations, and there wasn't an extension of how much more that they could bond for or how much more they could spend on capital. It was just essentially so they could pay off those funds that already existed.
Madam Chair, I just also note that during that time we actually needed to, our debt service was scheduled to expire in 2018, and Representative Abrams at the time asked that actually the total tax would expire in 2015. So there were some compromises on both ends. It was done at the last minute of the conference committee that year.
So
must have been 2004 then.
Must have been 2004. So to that point, Madam Chair,
yes.
Why do we need to extend this from 2015 to 2025 at this point?
Representative Reinhart.
Well, the proposal is for an expansion. Excuse me, Madam Chair, Representative Simpson. The proposal is for an expansion of the Civic Center to include two new facilities, one a performing arts center and the other a women's hockey exposition center, which are part of our long-range community plan for downtown Renaissance. So it's to support the expansion of the Civic Center that we've requested the extension of the sales tax.
And for
this expansion and for this expansion of the time frame, have you went back to the taxpayers with this proposal?
Madam Chair, Representative Simpson, that is the in the amendments we have the reverse referendum provision. And our community has voted three times in the past on this proposal, and we have this Envision 2020 project is a very broad-based community citizen participation project, and this is a piece of that planning. So we have a sense of very strong community commitment that are willing to go to a referendum if the community requests that of us.
Thank you for that. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As Representative Lanning and you, Madam Chair, would remember that in 2005 it probably was Representative Abrams at the end, because that year Representative Krenke stepped down and Representative Abrams took his spot. So it was that the 2005 session, I think.
Representative Marquardt is right. Representative Krenke could not go on. He didn't like the direction the tax bill was getting. That's correct. I forgot about that. Yes, that's right. Okay, thank you for that. Further questions? Anyone from the public who would like to speak for or against this bill? Not thank you, Representative Reiner and Mr. Hentges and Mr. Zierk, if I got that right, for being here with us tonight. We're going to lay this over for possible inclusion on this tax bill.
thank you, Madam Chair and members,
you.
For your time.
Thank you. I think we did, yeah. And so now, let's see, I'm going to move Representative Wagenius' bill, 3590. And I think Representative Wagenius is off in a conference committee, too, right now. So, Representative Wagenius, are you in a conference committee at this time, or have they wrapped up?
Wrapped up for the evening, thank
okay.
you.
Okay, yes, Representative Carlson here as well. Okay, so Representative Wagenius, I've moved your bill. Tell us about your bill, and welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you, members, for being here and late into the evening and working late. This is a water monitoring charge of 0.0002 cents per gallon on water in the 11-county metropolitan area, and the money is to be used for installation and rehab of groundwater monitoring wells. And let me tell you why it is before you. This year, the governor proposed in the bonding bill that we needed more observation wells of our groundwater, and specifically asked for $1 million, saying this, that the density and location and depth of the wells in most of the state is not adequate for assessing long-term trends, and said it was particularly acute in the metropolitan area, where the density of monitoring wells in some areas is insufficient to detect the development of depressed water level surfaces that could be caused by excessive groundwater withdrawal. Folks, 88% of Minnesotans use groundwater for drinking water, so it's important. In the bonding bill, $500,000 was funded. This is essentially the other $500,000. That's what we designed to do. One of the things that we asked DNR for when we were asked, give us some context for this $1 million. And the context of this is this. The Mount Simon aquifer is the big aquifer under much of the metropolitan area. There are 67 observation wells now. We should have 600. Statewide, there are about 750. We need 6,000. We're way behind. So what would it cost to do the whole job? $120 million. And that isn't including doing the atlases that tell us the next step beyond just monitoring. They tell us how much water essentially is there. So that's the bill. That's the context. There is an amendment here because it's my drafting error, I have to tell you. And I think you all have that amendment here.
Okay. So I'll move the A1 amendment. Representative Wagenius, give them the state you wanted.
Right. And it's taking away the word state because this is money raised in an 11-county metropolitan area. It's intended to be spent in the 11-county metropolitan area. And it wasn't clear.
Okay. Questions for the A1 amendment? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The A1 amendment is adopted. Questions for a member for the bill? Or testifiers for or against the bill? Representative Lanning, yes, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wagenius, I agree very much that we need to do much more monitoring of groundwater than we're currently doing. I wonder, though, and question about the precedents that may be being set here with this, especially if we were to do this. It opens the door to the question about doing the same thing in the rest of the state, and where you've got irrigators that are drawing large amounts of water that is virtually impossible to monitor as to how much they're taking out. You know, this kind of principle doesn't work. The other point I would make is that by just assessing it for those who are directly tapping into the groundwater, doesn't factor in the fact that there is a connection with surface water, and those that are using surface water can also be, in effect, taking from groundwater as well, and they're not being assessed or charged this. So can you respond to that inconsistency here in this proposal?
Well,
Republican is.
What I think you are suggesting is that statewide we use bonding dollars to pay for all the wells. And I think that is one way to approach it, but I have chosen a balance. Having this, with the bonding paying for half of it, I was the House author that brought through that bonding proposal of $500,000. But there's a balance here between the folks paying statewide, I think, and those who are using the water paying to check to see if they're using too much. And that's what this is about. When you talk about groundwater and surface water, they do intermingle. That's very clear. But basically, 88% of us in the state use groundwater for drinking water. That's huge. Much of that, 100% of the people here on wells use groundwater. But most of us use groundwater for drinking water. There's some cities that don't. I think yours is one that might not. But in general, we use groundwater.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. We ought to be doing this monitoring, but I think we ought to come up with a different method of funding this that recognizes the fact that those who are drawing from surface water are actually should also be helping to pay for this monitoring, not just those who are taking from groundwater supplies. So I would hope we could come up with a different approach to raising that same amount of money.
Well, in effect, folks are, because in the bond, when we did the bonding bill, that's paid for by every member of the state is paying for the bonding. And so remember, this is 50% bonding, and this is the 50% that comes from users. And generally speaking, we do user fees rather than, that's what we do. Folks are here from the DNR if you have specific questions that are beyond my knowledge on some of this.
Did anyone from the public want to comment further on Representative Lanning's questions? No. Change your mind? Come on down. Representative DeLaForce.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lagunias may be one of your witnesses could answer the question, but similar to Representative Lanning's concerns and comments, I was wondering, you share with us, I see that this didn't have a Senate companion, and I hope this isn't like some other bills we've seen lately that have come in after the deadline that have implications far beyond the taxes committee, but only pass through taxes because we're the only ones with the open sign still illuminated here on the committee door. And so I wonder if you can enlighten me with respect to what other committees have heard this bill and what kind of discussions you have had with respect to issues outside purely funding sources.
The Senate originally had the full $1 million in the bonding bill, and so I think they expected that it all be done in the bonding bill. The way the House did it was different. We had $500,000 in the bonding bill and put this proposal on the table at the same time. The Senate and the House do sometimes have different perspectives, and I think that is a different perspective.
Representative Lagunias, to be more direct, did any of the environment committees, for example, in either body have hearings with respect to this issue?
As we went through the, took the bonding bill through in both the House and the Senate, it certainly was heard in my committee, which is Environment Finance, and we have been talking more and more about the lack of groundwater monitoring in the state and the need to do it. So yes, we have talked about this very issue. Did we talk about this bill and have it go through? No, but did I talk about doing the balance? Yes. So we have talked about the issue. It went through in bonding. We've discussed it. We have had probably talked about it more than you'd want to talk about it.
Representative DeLaForce, further questions? Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lagunias, as we move forward and going off of what Representative Lanning stated and you stated about statewide need for this type of testing, wouldn't the proposed 3/8 sales tax initiative this fall on the constitutional amendment with the portion for clean water in that bill be an excellent source of funding for something like this?
Representative Lagunias.
Well, perhaps you know something that I don't know, that that bill is going to, that constitutional amendment was going to pass. I'm not sure of that at all. The way that is drafted, though, there are two pieces that deal with water. And one deals with the cleanup of our lakes, rivers, and streams. And that's a third of the bill.
Mm-hmm.
But, and of that third, 5% is to be used to protect drinking water sources. Now, I have seen that more like what they do in New York, where you protect the area around your drinking water source, if it's a river, or if it's a well, so things don't get into the well. I have not seen it as paying for something like this. I'm not sure that language is actually works either. When I think about it, I don't think that's not the way the language is drafted. It's more of a quality issue rather than a quantity issue. And what I'm presenting to you here is simply a quantity issue.
Well, I would beg to differ. I think that the quality issue is the quality of the water that we're drinking. But I don't have an inside track on whether or not that will pass this fall. I would doubt, but it would, that it will. But I also look at this as a straight tax increase for the seven counties here. So I think people need to be well aware of that too.
Further, Representative Wiggins.
Well, I just wanted to let you know that there are some folks here from DNR who can tell you about what the governor proposed in the bonding bill and saying you may see it as a straight tax increase. I see it as making sure that we actually have drinking water in the future and that the people who are using it should pay to make sure when they're taking it out that there is enough left for next year and 6 years from now and for my grandchildren.
Further questions? Is there anyone like to testify for or against? I'm going to amend my own motion and send it to finance or ways and means. Maybe Representative Carlson can tell me this, and I'll tell you why. So I was trying to consult with Mr. Michael here, and this is a pure fee, not a tax, and we've heard the fees and sent them out. So the way I look at this, it's the simple, straightforward, the user fee. So if you don't use the water, you don't pay it. So this isn't something the tax bill would normally carry. It's only here because of the Representative Krenke and Senator Pogonella succeeding on sending fees here. So that's why we've heard it, and I think it should be off out of the tax committee. This isn't generally what we would do, but we needed to hear the fees. So I guess I would ask Representative Carlson, is this your committee or a Representative Folger committee before the floor? Straight to the floor. Okay, so I'm going to amend my motion to have this go to Ways and Means and Representative Wiggins, unless you prefer it to stay right here with the omnibus tax bill process. Again, this is just a fee that would, nor prior to a year and a half ago, would never have even come here. So I hate to have it hung up with our process. We've tried to move all the fees back out as they've been brought forward. So, further discussion. If not, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay.
No.
The motion passes and the bill is sent to Ways and Means.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you, Representative Wiggins. Representative Tilbury.
Yes,
and Representative Tilbury moves House File 3395. Representative Tilbury, is this the same bill we heard last year?
Yes, it is.
Oh, well.
I just wanted everyone to get back on the right track.
I guess. How did you think that biased? Because we weren't making anyone rehear their bill. But we want to hear from Anoka County, so we're glad you're here. We're glad you're joining us tonight. Representative Tilbury.
Madam Chair, yes, I figured with our testifiers today, everyone will be all aboard. Okay,
great.
I'd like to move House File 3395
okay.
to lay over for them this tax bill. And it's pretty self-explanatory based on just in the agenda. If you have that in front of you, it's the light rail transit vehicle and repair parts exemption, modified and expanded to North Star Corridor Rail Project and Central and North Star Corridor construction purchases exempted from materials and supplies. And I have testifiers here for it.
Okay, who'd you like to start with, Representative Silbury?
Commissioner Dan Earhart, please.
Okay, so Commissioner Earhart, really nice to see you again.
Thank you. Welcome
to the committee. Sorry it's so late.
Good to be here. We'll be real brief.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dan Earhart, and I'm Anoka County Commissioner and also chair of the Rail Authority for Anoka County, and I'm also chair of the North Star Development Authority. And I want to wish Representative Tilbury here, I want to thank him for carrying the bill for us and sponsoring this bill. Our primary goal here has been uniformity in tax policy. The purchase of public transit buses are exempt from sales tax. Hiawatha Light Rail was exempt from sales tax. And we believe it is a matter of equity that commuter rail have equal sales tax treatment with transit buses and light rail. The Senate included the sales tax exemption for North Star in its last four tax bills. In conference committee, the previous House tax chair would say the bill could wait until next session. Last year, the sales tax exemption for North Star was included in the governor's budget. The House and the Senate tax bills and ultimately was vetoed, and the conference committee report was vetoed. We again ask for your consideration of our sales tax issue to be included in House File 3395 in the omnibus tax bill. And I appreciate being here, appreciate your time, and appreciate your consideration, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you. Questions for Commissioner Earhart? Representative LaForest or Representative Tilbury, either one?
Madam Chair, a question for Representative Tilbury. Obviously, we're looking at a deficit, and I see there's a $4.7 million general fund impact in the current biennium, and then of course there's a cost going forward. Looking at the revenue note, how would you pay for it?
Representative Tilbury.
And isn't that the question of the day? I guess I'm looking for some suggestions also on how we're going to pay for that. But I think that the way the policy is set up, that this is something that should be included in whatever we come up with, because of the Fairness Act of all the other transportation pieces.
Representative LaForest.
Madam Chair, I think made the point that I don't know how realistic the bill is, but a question in for Commissioner Earhart. Commissioner Earhart, as you know, the Anoka County Board has imposed upon the property taxpayers in Anoka County a 100% increase in the regional rail levy, and I'm wondering if they will be seeing a corresponding $5.6 million reduction in their property taxes if we did find a way to pay for this.
Mr. Earhart.
Madam Chair, Mr. DeLaForest, there is certainly going to be offsetting taxes if we do the transportation quarters and sales tax involvement there. And if this bill would pass and we would receive sales tax exemption on this project, this will help move this project along and some of the things that we see that are necessary to complete. There's a number of things, one of them being soils pollution and soils problems that we're now at about $1 million in a polluted site in Minneapolis. We have other questionable sites. We also are looking at the possible increase of eminent domain costs in moving these projects along, and we would and it's been suggested by the Federal Transit Administration that we purchase an additional car for a spare to make this project more viable, and I think that it's prudent that we have a spare rail car and that we purchase, and that would pretty much use those that credit up for sales tax. And so when you ask if it's reducing taxes, it would give us better service if we would have that
sales tax exemption.
Representative LaFleur.
Madam Chair and Commissioner, I'm just confused. My question was rather simple. Would taxpayers in Anoka County, property taxpayers, be seeing either a dollar-for-dollar reduction or some other reduction? And if so, what would the amount of the reduction be?
Mr. Earhart.
I'm sure it's Mr. DeLaFleur. See, it doesn't work that you get a direct offset to the property taxes. What this does is goes into a contingency fund. We have a contingency with this, and the approval processes and where you spend that money and how much we have left in the contingency fund after this project is completed will depend upon the kinds of things that I mentioned earlier. And so it would not be an offset in property taxes, as you refer to.
Well, Madam Chair, as I said, I don't think the bill is going anywhere given the budget situation, but it seems like yet another example that North Star Rail comes yet again looking for some state funding. And it seems to me that Representative Tingelstad told this committee when we got the $130 million out the door with bonding, this would be the end of it. I mean, again, anytime we can spread the cost of North Star away from my constituents to help the state, from them, you know, I'm happy to receive that, but I don't know how viable it is at this point, but that's all I have for now.
Thank you, Scott. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm disappointed that Representative Lucamini isn't here tonight, because I was going to suggest to Representative Tilbury that he asked Representative Lucamini if he might consider some RRRB money to help him out here. Unfortunately, he's not here, so.
Representative Earhart, did you want Representative Tilbury to even comment on that? Further questions? Anyone from the public for or against this bill who would like to join us? And you know, I think Representative Tilbury and Commissioner Earhart, I mean, I would add that I think people have been, I think Representative DeLaForest is right to point out the problem that we have, that we don't have revenue right now. But I also want to commend Representative Tilbury, who has consistently been willing to put the vote up for the revenue to create some of these things. I mean, and Representative DeLaForest, you've been consistent, because you don't want to bring the new revenue in to do these things. But what we have the problem with is the members who want the stuff but don't want to pay. And I think you're both being sort of true to your philosophical belief about this issue. And I think, you know, it's clear that the governor, the House, and the Senate have been committed to finding the resources here, and has demonstrated that when there's been resources, there isn't now. So it's going to make it tougher. I know the Senate's gotten in there, and I'm not completely giving up, but we are in a $1 billion deficit. But I also know that Representative Tilbury would be there to vote for the right revenue source if we could put it together. And I know Representative DeLaForest, of course, you've been real honest in your approach to this as well.
Well, and Madam Chair, I'd also like to commend Representative Tilbury. I mean, I've told him privately, and I'd say it publicly, that it's a shame that it seems like Fridley, with their station and the like, they've sort of been left to fend for themselves, and everybody knows I'm deeply skeptical of the rail project, but I commend Representative Tilbury for really soldiering on and fighting for this project, even though we have a different viewpoint of it, especially given the way Fridley has been treated with respect to their station, and we work on the TIF issues, for example, with it, and so I will, Representative Tilbury, commend you, being a newer legislator, and your passionate and hard work on behalf of this issue. I know you and I have had many discussions about it, because we represent geographically similar areas, although we differ on the project, and so I don't have any problem telling our colleagues here in the chair of the tax committee that I certainly do appreciate your efforts. You're very passionate about it, and your efforts do not go unnoticed.
Thank you for that. Representative Tilbury.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, and I enjoyed talking to you privately also. It's good to get your viewpoint on it. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, since the Philly Station was brought up, the money that would come from the sales tax will go into the contingency fund, and it's not clear, and I've gotten letters from the Federal Transit Administration, and we've been in discussions with them, and there'll be an attempt to use any money that might be left in the contingency fund to work towards completing the project, including the Fridley station. And so that's one of the efforts, but I can't tell you
what the Federal Transit Administration will require at this time in order to utilize that money. They control that, they scrutinize it, they do everything possible to make sure that money is spent appropriately, and but that's one of the issues that we'll be facing in the future.
Thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate that. And Representative Tilbury, do you have further thoughts there? Yes,
I do.
No?
To
please, welcome.
Quickly.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Jim McDonough, Ramsey County Commissioner, Chair of the Ramsey County Regional Rail Authority. I'm here to speak on the Central Corridor portion here. You may have heard of that project. That's a small little project we've got going here in Ramsey County, Hennepin, City of St. Paul, and Minneapolis. It's an 11-mile line connecting the two downtowns going through the university campus. We've been working on this project for a number of years now, and this is what nationwide, this Central Corridor line has the highest new start ridership of any line in the country. But on the budget side, it's a difficult line to compete with federally for the federal dollars. This is a $909 million project. Federal government will be coming forward with $455 of that, and $456 of that will be coming from the local share. And we have to compete nationally, and we have to make sure that this line functions. But we also have to ensure that when we go to the FTA for those federal dollars, we can compete in it. With these other lines that are being built in Salt Lake City, Denver, Portland, Seattle, Dallas, throughout the country. And this is an important exemption for us. This will roughly, the estimates are about $10 million that this will buy in functionality in this line and as we move this project forward. So with that, Madam Chair, I know that it's been a long night, but certainly, this is a critical piece for Central Corridor as we move it forward, the sales tax exemption. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner McDonough. Questions for Commissioner McDonough? Commissioner McLaughlin, I see you want to join us as well. Members, Ms. Dalton, can you tell us, this is for Central Corridor and North Star Corridor, did Hiawatha Rail get the same treatment that is being requested now? Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as it relates to the rail cars, that certainly is already in law for light rail transit, which is why you only have to extend it for the North Star Corridor. Hiawatha will get that part of it, regardless of whether any bill passes. The Central Corridor will get that, just like Hiawatha. I believe, although I don't have my book with me right now, so I'm kind of talking off the top of my head, that Hiawatha Corridor also got a sales tax exemption under construction. But I'm not 100% positive on that.
And did they get the rolling stock repair parts?
They did get the rolling
stock. Okay, and so the difference then is that now that the sales tax for transit has passed, there's some more revenue stream. We don't want to encourage the governor who's been trying to spend that already, and I'm sure you don't either, but we just want to get clear kind of what happened with Hiawatha. So, Mr. McLaughlin, welcome.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Peter McLaughlin. I'm Chair of the Hennepin County Regional Railroad Authority, Hennepin County Commissioner, and Chair of the Metro Transitways Development Board. Just to respond to a couple of the questions that have come up really quickly. One, my recollection is Hiawatha did get the exemption for the construction materials. Number two, if this exemption had been in place 2 years ago, the Fridley Station would be part of what was being built on North Star today. So if that had happened, that was there, that had to be cut because the budget had to be skinnied up in order to meet the federal requirements. On the third point, the Central Corridor portion will be the fiscal impact will be in the following biennium, not the current biennium, as the fiscal note indicates. And there's been discussion with the Senate Tax Committee Chairman of this is a reimbursement only, and there has been discussion of seeking the reimbursement after this biennium ends for the North Star. And so the Senate Tax Committee Chairman has actually discussed that with us, and that's acceptable. We've indicated in testimony that would be acceptable to actually bill it after the end of the current biennium. It doesn't make the fiscal impact go away, but it does move it into the next biennium.
Okay. Thanks for that.
I'm just your manager. My points are very, very quick. Number one, there are 100 projects that are in alternative analysis around the country. There are 10 projects that are in the same state as the Central Corridor. There's fierce competition for the federal money. The federal money is designed to provide half of the funds for these projects. We're competing for those funds with a handicap, one arm tied partially behind our back, because there is in the case of Central, a $10 million extra cost for the construction materials that we have to bear in the budget that is not borne in sales tax in some other communities around the country where the sales tax isn't imposed. So because of this fierce competition, and we've got to meet this calculation that the federal government imposes, where they look at cost and travel time saved, this is actually a way to reduce the cost of the project and allow us to be more competitive as we go forward. That's something I think for the state of Minnesota is a good thing, because these federal New Starts money are new money that will come into the state of Minnesota if we compete and win, and it's money that can't be used for roads. And if we don't get this money, it's going to go to Denver, or it's going to go to Salt Lake City, or it's going to go to Dallas or other places with which we compete. So this is going to help with the functionality on these lines, make them more competitive around the country, and I think it's a positive step in tax policy. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Questions for Commissioner McLaughlin? Actually,
Madam Chair, mine's more of a comment. I think, obviously these exemption discussions have a lot of validity in terms of our debates around here, and the amount of money obviously weighs in significantly, but whether it's a transit project or a wastewater infrastructure project, we are often making value judgments as to which exemption is better than the other exemption. And, at some point, I know that Representative De La Forest has had a bill that I think you have had related to, if we're going to exempt some, why aren't we exempting other? And I think that's Representative Tilbury's argument related to North Star versus Hiawatha. At some point, we've got to either, figure out how to exempt all, or figure out a more fair way of exempting things in a consistent manner versus here or there, or depending on where the representative is, depending on whether it's transit or wastewater or whatever. I know that a number of members of the committee have wastewater infrastructure exemptions. I happen to be one of those. And those aren't things that the city wants to do. Those are the things that the city is being required to do to service the people. And so at some point we've got to dig down and figure out those discussions as well.
Agreed. I think that's a point well made. Further testimony. Mr. McLaughlin and McDonough and Earhart, thank you for being here. Any other questions for Representative Silver? Representative Simpson.
Just a technical question for the chair. Is this bill divisible for future pay?
Probably. So
thank
probably
you.
When we mark up the omnibus tax bill, you might want to take a look at that, Representative Silver. I don't have it in front of me again, but my guess is there might be an effort to separate a couple projects there. So
okay.
You've been warned by Representative Simpson. So, further questions on this bill? If not, we're going to lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you for being here tonight. And Representative House, wow, he's still here. Members, as Representative House comes up, I want everyone to know something about tomorrow. The last time I talked to Ms. Bergman, there were 26 testifiers signed up to testify in favor, I believe, all in favor of the Mall of America tomorrow. So while Representative Howell is coming down, I just want you to know that we've probably got a couple hours of public testimony just on the bill before we get to the beginning discussing it. So I just would warn you, get some sleep tonight. Representative Howell, I'm going to go ahead and move your bill, and I don't have the number, Representative Howell.
3119.
3119, and you have an A1 amendment?
Correct. If you and move that, I would have
I will move the A1 amendment. Discussion of the A1 amendment. If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
I oppose, say nay. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative House.
I will try to be as quick as simple as possible. Ms. Dalton prepared the amendment for me because she said that the Senate drafted the bill incorrectly. I believe her. This puts the bill in a better shape. Basically, what we're doing here is school districts that would like to purchase a propane-powered bus would be exempt from sales tax and Minnesota Motor Vehicle Excise Tax. And I noticed there is a cost to it. I believe you have a fiscal note. I believe it's $20,000 in 09, $50,000 in 010, and $50,000 in 011 total cost. I'm hoping that the chair will talk to the chair of Ways and Means and realize that that's a number that we don't count. But in the amendment, what I just happened to notice that we already have exempted purchase of motor vehicle for public libraries, purchase of a ready-mix concrete truck, different things like that. If we're doing that for the private sector, why aren't we doing this for the kids? If we're going to charge property tax, motor vehicle tax for school buses, and then have the school districts come back in here and ask for more money, why don't we just simply get rid of some of the mandates and the sales taxes that we charge? And Madam Chair, as long as I'm here, I always complain every time I'm in front of the tax committee, this pen that's offered to me by the House Administrative Services that I get for free, they pay sales tax on this. And we hire two employees to count this money every year that we simply exchange from the state office building to the Department of Revenue and back again. So I'm not going to bring that amendment up this year, but I'd appreciate your support when you lay this over for consideration.
Thank you, Representative House. And we have heard a couple bills to expand the sales tax base and lower the rate. I mean, your point is well taken about this long list of folks who aren't paying it. I really can't justify how this has happened. I don't know how it's happened. But we appreciate that you've got an argument for your propane-fueled motor vehicles.
Madam Chair?
Representative House, yes.
I have worked 40 years in the concrete business, and they can afford to pay sales tax on those ready-mix trucks.
Maybe we could do a swap. I'm just kidding. Questions for Representative House? Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak for or against this bill? If not, we really appreciate you staying this long, Representative House. I know Representative Breinert was kind of convincing everyone ahead of her to let her go first. I don't know if you were in the room or...
I was outside the...
Okay. Well, we're sorry. We appreciate it very much. Representative Breinert, question? Nope. Okay. If not, we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion on this tax. So thank you, Representative House. We are adjourned.